Welcome to Spoiler in Time, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone who is out there. This is the show where we take everything we've learned on Cord Killers about how to watch stuff and talk about it. And we are working our way through Firefly. We're going to talk about the episode The Train Job today. Also going to talk about Season 7, Episode 2 of Game of Thrones, as well as Episodes 4 and 5 of Season 2 of Preacher. I'm Tom Merritt. Brian Brushwood, how are you feeling?
Oh, man, dude, I'm fired up. I'm ready. I got so many opinions and feelings and things to talk about. And we got letters, but first, of course, we got to check in on our movie draft.
I have two things to say about the movie draft, yeah. Brian Brushwood.
Yeah.
First is, well done with Girls Trip, $31 million. Not bad. That's more than I expected. And I think that's going to help you maybe hold on to second place. Second thing I have to say is I think I'm going to win the movie draft, Brian.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, by the way, congratulations, Tom. For the first time, you've announced that you're going to win before the last bell rang. And normally, you're very conservative.
Well, this week, I have Atomic Blonde, and I'm up by more than 120 million. What is it, actually?
Yeah, almost 200 billion. Yeah, 150 million is what you're up.
Granted, Spider-Man Homecoming may bring in a few more dollars, but it's not going to be enough to catch me.
It's all over. Congratulations.
War for Planet of the Apes is totally stalled out, so...
Yeah, congratulations. Yeah. You're definitely going to hit number one. I got to admit, I'm surprised that... let's see, War for the Planet of the Apes, hasn't even hit 100 million yet, and that's after 2 weeks.
And that was the one I was afraid of, right? Because if that one had overperformed, it could have pushed them. Because Spider-Man Homecoming at 251 million, it's probably going to hit 300 by the end of it all. And a good, solid War for Planet of the Apes could have caught me.
Dunkirk had a very strong opening at 50 million, but that's not going to be enough to push Team Frog Pants to any direction. And yeah, the news was Girls Trip did very, very well, especially for being a relatively affordably priced comedy. And it's got great reviews on Rotten Tomatoes.
It beat out Scotch Bros' Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets.
Yeah.
17 million. Ouch.
I've seen a lot of advertising for Valerian, by the way.
Yeah.
I've not seen
probably
any.
Probably $17 million worth of advertising I have seen for Valerian.
You know, one thing we didn't talk about, the Dark Tower movie coming up, and maybe this does belong in Spoiler in Time. Did you see that recent TV spot trailer that was very focused on all the Stephen King tie-ins for everything?
No, I didn't see that, actually.
The overlay text said, there are many worlds and they all lead to one place, the Dark Tower. And as they're saying that, they're showing, you see the Pennywise reference from It with the collapsed roller coaster. You see a kid playing with a Christine car. You see a photo of the Overlook Hotel. You see a photo of one of the Misery books from that author in the background. I don't know. It's I'm cautiously optimistic.
The really solid Dark Tower fans seem to be worried by what they're seeing and saying, that's not what I expected from the Gunslinger. And the thing that you have to remember is this isn't the Gunslinger. This is the Dark Tower movie. It's the beginning of what they hope will be more, maybe television shows, maybe other movies. And it's not the first time through.
Correct. So the and that'll make sense later. But the movie is allegedly 95 minutes long, which means it's very, very short. I'll tell
people
you
already
what,
condemning it just based on that. And I'm like, well, you don't know.
Well, and what is it you want it to be? If you want it to try to encompass the entire epic storytelling all in one 95 minute movie, you're probably going to be disappointed. However, if you want to sell the world on Roland Deschain is the baddest ass gun-fu playing MF-er on the planet, all I need is him looking like Neo. All it has to do is feel like Equilibrium. All it has to do is make me feel like Idris Elba is the greatest action hero I've ever seen. And I want
just
to know
give
more.
Give me chills when he tells me I've forgotten the face of my father, and I'll be good.
And that's it, right? Yeah. That's it. That's all. Weirdly, the lower I set the stakes, the lower I set the bar for this movie, the happier and more excited I get. So
welcome to my world.
My expectations are very, very low. I think I'm going to have a great, great time.
I think that actually explains a lot of our differences in opinions on movies. Is I go into most movies with almost no expectations.
Sure,
like,
sure.
And I'm like, oh, look, they didn't screw that part up. But yeah, so that Atomic Blonde coming out this week, July 28th, Dark Tower, August 4th. And that's the end of the summer movie draft right there. Let's move right into Preacher. We're talking about episodes 4 and 5. So both of the New Orleans episodes is a good way to think about it in your head if you want to follow along. I kind of didn't love, well, that's not the right way to put it. I was slightly disappointed that we didn't move on to another city because I kind of liked the Texas road trip, then Las Vegas, now New Orleans. I was like, where are we going next? But the story sort of dictated that you had to stay in New Orleans. And it went from being a story about, hey, we're in New Orleans, to a story about her backstory.
Yeah, I noticed this time that the opening credit sequence seems to be static, and it seems to be mainly focused on New Orleans, which makes me think we're going to be hanging around for New Orleans for quite a bit longer. And it almost makes me wonder if we're not looking at a future format where, by and large, each season is the story of them tearing up a new American city, right?
I can't remember if the Las Vegas episode had Vegas scenes in the credits or not. I just don't remember.
I don't recall either. I'm tempted to say I don't think so. But we're seeing the consolidation of I don't know how it went in the comic book, but I deeply adore the strange triad of Cassidy, Tulip, and Jesse, and the ebb and flow. One of the things that we saw in this most recent episode is for the first time we watch Cassidy try to manipulate Jesse into doing something that he knows will upset and damage his relationship with Tulip. In that he's like, you're like, I don't know about you, man, but I'd kill this guy. I would straight up kill him. And instead he lets him go, which you know, puts him back in Tulip's good graces. And the two of them are bonded together stronger than ever. And Cassidy is sort of, you know, quietly fuming on the side, like, oh yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
But they also, Cassidy has sort of led us to believe that that's not what he's interested in with Tulip.
Correct.
I think it's not a, I want to be the one with Tulip. It's that he wants to be equal in the love, so to speak.
Well, yeah.
Which is such a tragic story for an ageless vampire, don't you think?
Well, okay. But understand, like, to all of this, to an ageless vampire, all of this is a momentary diversion. These are a couple of cute puppies, and he's kind of upset because one of the puppies doesn't love him as much as the other one does, and he wants it to be equal so that he can be bemused by both.
I'm seeing it as, I can never have a connection because I live forever and everyone dies, so I need to grasp firmly to whatever connections I can ever make at any given point.
Oh, that's interesting, because I don't think that I read it that way. I think
I don't know. You've read the comic and I have it, so there may be more information.
I've only read the first episode.
That opinion, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I've only read the first issue of the comic, so okay. I wouldn't put me in that camp at all. Regardless, like, there is a paternalistic, brotherly, sexual infatuation that he has with Tulip, and there's this full on bromance with Jesse. And he wants to have both, and he feels threatened when the kinship between those two makes it feel like he's being shut out. And so he takes action to make sure that there's still a place for Cass in the mix.
I can't think of a better told third wheel story.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, because a friend of mine, I used to get in fights with a couple of friends of mine. And one of them said, hey, Brian, a triangle can work if all three sides are strong. And the reason we're fighting is because our part of the triangle is not very strong. And so we made efforts to strengthen that. And that keeps echoing through my mind watching all this.
Yeah. And otherwise, if I had to find a nit to pick, I kind of don't buy Jesse just becoming the doofus who sits on the couch and drinks beer and watch John Wayne movies all the time. It doesn't seem motivated. And maybe I just need to see more about what happened with the baby and all of that. But I'm willing to swallow it because it does lead us to the revelation and makes it believable that he wants to get back to Texas and wants to become a preacher and takes over his dad's church. So I like that part of it.
It was totally, totally believable to me, if for no other reason than I lived through a version of that, because when I was on the road touring with the Magic Show, I had a very simple purpose. My purpose was always go to the next city, always get on the next stage, spend 3 hours setting everything up, do the hour and a half long Magic Show, pack up, go to the next gig. And you don't have a lot of time for introspection and self-reflection during that time. And then once we made babies, once all of a sudden I became a podcaster, once all of a sudden Bonnie went back in the studio and started depending on me to take care and do other stuff, it is a big change to be, I don't want to say locked in a cage, but you can make that parallel where it's like, my job is to just be in the house doing whatever. And it's like, well, if I'm just doing whatever, I'll watch John Wayne movies. And in Jesse's case, I'd be like, why not wake up and drink beer and smoke pot or whatever? Like, it took a while for us to get to a point where the podcasting stuff ramped up enough to where, we're back to a sense of purpose now with the Modern Rogue and stuff. And I could see in that gap, Jesse needed to get to that moment where he's like, no, I do have a purpose. I'm going to go out and run this church or whatever. Like, I think there are those moments. If you've ever had an injury and you've been laid up for a while, you probably can relate to that. I bought that entirely, especially.
I guess what I'm saying is because that's really well said. Is the idea of him not having much else to do and dead end job that he doesn't care about is all believable to me. That he would go there without deciding to go back to the old life. Like when Tulip sort of cracks the door open to the old life by having their former contact over for dinner. I would think Jesse would jump at it. I guess that's the part that I sort of just had to say, okay, I guess he just changed, right? He's just done with that life.
I think we'll get more detail about it. Yeah, in my mind, there's some conversation they had after this agonizing moment of losing, a kid.
Right. Where he blames that life for that.
Right. And to him, the obvious totally thing is we got to get right. And this is the beginning of him trying to get right with God and all that stuff,
Yeah. And that all makes sense right there.
Speaking of God, let's talk about God's acting real.
Oh my gosh, that was the best.
It was so good. So good. I love what they did. They sold me on it. I love the way it was all revealed. Well,
and I was so confused. I'm like, but wait a minute. How can he be an actor? Like he was coming from heaven within the rules of this universe. And then, of course, you get to the end of the audition tape. You're like, oh.
Oh, yeah. Well, that'll get you there, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that could work.
Also, is it just me? If it's not the actual set, that place, Dennis's place, has to be intentionally winking at the Paper Street Soap Company from Fight Club. Like, if that's not the actual building where that was shot.
Such a bigger Fight Club fan than me. I don't recall it well enough to say.
Yeah. I'm sure somebody somewhere will figure out. But aesthetically, identical. Totally identical.
Yeah. It's definitely got the right vibe. I totally see that now that you pointed it out.
What do you think about the whole... I like the whole fight scene with the torture dude and him not being able to hear the voice. And that's why they were able to go. Although that was distracting because the whole time I'm just like, just yank the earbuds
out. Same here.
Out.
I was like, just get the phone dead. They don't stay in very well. Pull them out. Yeah. No, I thought you were going to go to hell.
Yes. Yes. Of course.
I don't want you to go to hell. But
I thought you were going to go to hell.
I really like hell now. Like that this at first I'm like, okay, of course when you're in hell you're going to run into Hitler and how can you pass up that scene? But now having him as part of prison life, it's Orange is the New Black in hell where Hitler is your new buddy and you're like, well shoot, I'm going to have to turn on my friend, but my friend's Hitler, so I guess it's okay, right?
Well, and plus also they make it clear where it's like, what are you doing with the goody two shoes crap, man? You're in hell. Act like it.
Yeah.
I'm really curious to see where stuff goes with Eugene. I love the fusion of technology with the drudgery of bureaucracy and the fact that it's the fact that they're understaffed that allows any of these non-personal hell moments to happen.
By the way, if you're middle management in hell, that would make sense. Hell would be to be continually understaffed.
Yeah, right. And I'm sure you noticed they did weird stuff with the voice of that one administrator chick just randomly dropping the pitch and all that stuff. Aesthetically, they do such an amazing job of giving you those nonverbal visual cues to set your expectations at any moment. We talked about this on the Weird Things podcast, but for example, when they want you to take everything lighter, they will intentionally key the green screens worse so it feels more grindhouse and the trite phrasing of stuff just washes over you. Whereas when stuff gets very, very visceral is usually when you can expect, brains to explode on somebody because it sucks you into this very hyper real moment. And then all of a sudden you get shocked back into that grindhouse moment.
All right. Any thoughts on Preacher before we move on?
Killer of Saints, waiting for him to get more interesting. I'm glad he shows up. I think he's aesthetically awesome, waiting for him to do something I care about.
Yeah. And the daughter saying, I know where Preacher is at the end is
right.
Promising that maybe we'll get an actual interaction between them again. We saw one on the road so far. Let's move on to Game of Thrones, episode 2 of season 7. And we got a couple emails. Robert Martin pointed out that in the opening credits of Game of Thrones, the water to the east of the wall is frozen over, allowing the walkers to just walk around the wall and fulfill the vision that Gregor saw in the fire.
I did not notice that because I got to be honest, even though I know they put clues into the set pieces in that opening credit sequence, I didn't give it my full attention, but that's a really good catch.
Yeah, I could go either way. That could absolutely be a clue. I think it's very astute of Robert to notice that. It could also just be something where they're like, oh, right, well, no, they can't really because X, Y, and Z. But I'm interested to watch for that. Also, Todd wrote in and noted that in the books, and this isn't much of a spoiler for the books, I guess it's technically a tiny spoiler, there's a different character than Jorah Mormont who gets the grayscale. And they haven't included that character in the Game of Thrones TV series. And Todd thinks that's important. He thinks, well, if they meant to give grayscale to somebody and they're like, well, we don't have that character, so let's give it to Jorah, then maybe that grayscale and its cure is a key important plot point.
Important enough that they would rather infect a major character with it than just bring in a character to have it. Yeah. Than not have it at all.
All right. Let's talk about the rest of this episode, which I adored. I was not cheering, but I was smiling through large parts of it, seeing Daenerys meet Lady Olenna, seeing the Vipers and Daenerys and Tyrion. It's like an all-star game around the table at Dragonstone. Seeing the battle with Euron and at that moment where Theon turns back into Reek for a moment.
Oh yeah,
chickens out, and then Euron laughs, cackles hilariously. And I'm not going to try to cover all the points, but the moment when Nymeria showed back up, I as soon as she was in that woods, I'm like, it's going to be Nymeria. She's going to come back. And I was so excited when Nymeria and her pack show up. And then as soon as Arya says, I'm going back home, I knew. I hadn't thought of it until that moment. I was like, Nymeria can't go with her. She won't go with her. Not after she's been away that long, after she got driven away, she's her own person. And so when Arya says, no, that's not you, I was at first confused, like, oh, is she saying that's not Nymeria? But then because I'm rewatching season one, I flashed back to the story where the scene where Ned is telling Arya, oh, you're going to become a great lady and wear dresses and go to parties. And Arya says, no, that's not me. And I'm like, oh, she's telling Nymeria, my plans for you aren't you. You go be you. And I just thought that was great.
I totally missed that. I thought, like, maybe it's just another dire wolf.
I hadn't just rewatched that episode.
That's great. What a great catch on that. Very, very good. Let's start with the only negative thing, and it's not even that negative. Is it really that big a surprise that Dragonstone would be made of dragon glass.
I kind of thought the same thing.
Sort of laid it right out in front of you, right?
Nobody noticed before, but I guess, I mean, dragon glass is not thought of. Like, people are like, oh, that's just dragon glass. It's just trash glass. So I guess maybe that's why? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I also like seeing a little bit of life be bred into that southern tip of the world. I love the design of that table that they had sex on that one time that... that is in the shape of Dragonstone that's in the shape of Westeros.
I just saw that episode too, so that was kind of fun.
I like this collection of people all admitting that they've failed and that as failures to take the throne, they're now willing to join the Cool Kids Club.
And one of the things I noticed too is we are back to season one in the political dynamics, right? Where the wall is saying, we need your help. It wasn't as urgent in season one, but they were saying, stop squabbling. You guys need to pay attention. Now Jon Snow is saying that, and he gets to say it directly to Daenerys. So that's way cooler. But it is the same thing of like, you guys, STFU, there's a real problem. And it's even worse than it was a couple of years ago. We then have King's Landing seemingly ripe for the picking, but because some miscalculations happening, an otherwise very stable plan goes awry, and now it looks like King's Landing and the Lannisters may be able to get out from under, which leaves Jon Snow in the horrible position of Daenerys is going to be right when she says, I need your army at my back, which she probably is going to say. And Jon Snow is going to be right when he says, yeah, but you, none of you should be fighting because we have a much bigger threat.
Yeah. Also, lots of eunuchs. So many eunuchs. So many eunuchs.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I was like, wow, I forgot about Theon, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then
we have a eunuch sex scene.
Grey Worm? Yeah.
Which, by the way...
I mean, who says you couldn't have a eunuch sex scene? They said it couldn't be done.
Now I've seen everything.
A eunuch six...
We are convinced that Yara and the Sand Snake chick are both dead. We think only Reek survived. Theon's the only one who survives.
Well, we saw two of them dead, like unquestionably dead. I think, didn't we see a third hanging? Or was that just one of the two?
Yeah, well, one neck over it, one stabbed.
So Mom is the only one left alive, and they said they were going to keep her alive. So,
oh, did they? Okay, I didn't know.
Yeah, they said, we have better plans for you because I think she's going to be the gift.
Got it.
Because remember, Euron said, I'm going to bring you a gift, Cersei. I think that's going to be the present.
Yara, did we see her die, or is it that just implied? I don't recall.
No, we don't see her die.
Okay,
so she may not be dead yet either. The last we see of her is looking pissed off at Theon for turning back into Reek.
Loved the scene with Hot Pie. That was adorable and wonderful.
Oh my gosh, right? I mean, just, I was like, oh, right. I forgot he was still alive.
Well, and it's
making pies.
It's a great reminder that the small folk live real lives. And he's so excited to talk about, well, the secret is you got to brown the butter first. And then most people don't have the patience for that. And it's like, yeah, while all this other stuff has been happening, Hot Pie has been learning to make really good meat pies, right? And then, and that moment she said, like, oh, yeah, I didn't do that when I made a pie. And you think of the last time she made a pie and involving meat.
Well, and it's such a great scene because Arya's like, you're my friend, so I'm not going to be condescending. But we want to talk pies. I made some pies in my life. That's very interesting. You know, the local gossip. And then he drops the like, oh, the Boltons aren't in Winterfell anymore.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, crap. Maybe I should be paying attention to you for news.
Yeah, that's a great moment, too. And that moment that she decides not to. This is the first time we've seen her intentionally deviate from her plan of vengeance in order to have a reunion. And I was like, oh, what a great moment. She's going to go have a reunion. And Justin was in the room and he goes, yeah, Arya and reunions. How's that gone so far?
No.
And I was whoops.
I mean, I don't know what's going to stop her.
I don't know that there is anything. So
I'm very curious what's going to happen between there and Winterfell. I mean, it could be as simple as like John goes to Daenerys and maybe Sansa. But I love leaving Sansa in charge of Winterfell. What a great turnaround story for her. from weeping, simpering, no power woman to Queen of Winterfell. But yeah, maybe Sansa gets sent out somewhere, and when Arya returns, there's been a wildling rebellion or something. Who knows?
The only part, and I'm sure this will be fixed, but it does. This has felt, for the most part, like a fairly chaotic, well-balanced Game of Thrones, as it were, between many different forces. At this point, we have the looming threat of a bad guy that we've virtually not seen at all, the Ice King, whatever his name is, right?
The Night King.
The Night King. It feels very unbalanced. Euron, not aside, there's really not much of the Lannister threat that I'm feeling. It doesn't feel like they have many allies. It feels like they're small. It feels like they're about to get crushed.
I think it's supposed to, and that's why Euron destroying the fleet is such a good scene.
Yes, yes.
Because they're crushed if that fleet makes it to the south, to Dorne.
Correct, correct. Yes, and we'll see. I reserve judgment until we get there. But still the best show on TV, man.
Yeah.
Hottest eunuch sex around.
I have to say, too, like, just seeing Daenerys in Westeros is just so weird.
Oh, is it?
It's so weird.
You mean
and it's probably because I've been watching season one and season two again. But it's like, wow, she's waited so long. Like, this is all she's talked about, and now she's there. She should be geeking out more, like...
Yeah,
but like she said, that's not been her home.
So. At this point, I'm almost uncomfortable with how powerful all my favorite good guys are feeling. And
that's good. That's exactly where they want you to be.
Exactly, right? Where I was like, well, it seems like the cat pretty much got this licked, right?
And yeah, this is all the can, right? What could go wrong?
We'll see.
Let's finish up with Firefly episode 2 production order, but we're just going by names. The train job, I believe this was the first one broadcast as well.
Yeah, the story I heard was that they did the pilot, they did the episodes, they had the episode order, and then the suits came and said, and again, this is all apocryphal, you'll have to check my work, but the suits said, yeah, we're not going to air these in order, we don't think this 2-hour thing's going to fly, we're just going to play one of the other ones first. And Joss Whedon apparently said, hey, look, I get it. You're not going to play the 2-hour thing. That's fine. But at least let me write a proper pilot that sets everything up correctly. And so as a result, what we have is, I think, the most painful of all of the episodes to watch. And that's to be clear, even when it's bad, it's like sex. Even when it's bad, it's pretty good, right? But this is after the momentum and speed built up with the first episode, the 2-hour pilot, to essentially get a retread of all that, resetting up all of the characters, all for kind of a middling thing just to show where everyone is ethically and politically.
That is not how I see this episode at all. That's
really
so funny.
Well, and on top of all of that, to see Starship Troopers, you know, uniforms brought out of, you know, cheap holding, and I don't know. This is probably my least favorite of all of the Firefly episodes, just because it feels the most piloty, it feels the most retread, it feels like a step backwards in the progression of all the characters.
It doesn't feel like a pilot to me at all. It feels like a second episode. And so that's how I interpret what I think you're saying is resetting up. To me, it sounds like, hey, if you missed last week, let me remind you, this guy's the doctor and he's on here for that. And that is a very common broadcast phenomenon, even still in 2002, because DVRs were brand new and people didn't necessarily see things all the time. So that's where I was coming from with that part of the story. The main part of the story, the train job, I really enjoy. I still enjoy it, even now. This is probably not my favorite episode either, but it's in the middle of the pack, I would think. And I really like the twists and turns with them being caught, and is the sheriff going to discover them? And of course, you're getting a very important, you don't realize it at the time, but a very important fact with Mal very early on in the season, going against Nishka, someone you were very clearly told, do not go against this guy, several times at the beginning of the episode.
I will say in defense of this episode that this is the one where you get to see that amazing scene of him kicking.
Oh, yeah. It's so good.
kicking the guy into the engine, you know, like, and then going to the next guy, giving the exact same speech.
Who won't even let him finish? Like, yep, nope, yep, on yep, board.
Got it, I'm got in. It. Yep. I think we're on the same page here. There's lots to like, but I'll be interested to see. Keep in mind, all of this is being seen through the lens of, like, in my mind, every single one of these episodes is perfect. And I'm intentionally, this go-round, this fourth or fifth lap, after a decade revisiting this, I'm trying my best to see what I couldn't see before. And one of the things I noticed is that the fight scenes were fine for television of that era. The choreography is not so action-packed as I remember it.
Yeah.
But
for sure. Still, in fact, that fight scene in the Alliance bar, I always remember that as being later in the series. For some reason, I remember that as being like 8 or 9, because by then we've really established what the Alliance is and how the divisions are with the ex-Browncoats. And so I always want to put that, you know, you always find yourself in an Alliance bar on Alliance Day, Mal.
Unification Day, yeah.
Unification Day, yeah, later on. But and so when he, even to the point when I started watching this, I had to stop and go, wait, is this the train job? Am I watching the right one? And I was. We got a call in. It's actually a voice attachment from Thomas, who had some thoughts and questions about Firefly. Let's go ahead and play that, Bryce.
Hi, guys. Tom here. And I look forward to watching Firefly with you guys. And I started Friday because I'm in the hunt for a Friday show. Where do I find it? Is it on Netflix? Is it Hulu? Do I need to subscribe to something else? How visual is it? I'm visually, will I be able to follow it, do you think? Was just your guys giving me the bits and pieces afterwards? Or is it really too visual? Do you think it's really visual?
Man, That's a really good question. We have a number of non-sighted fans. I don't know if I told you this, Tom, but we had some folks come out to some Scam School shoots that enjoy Scam School as non-sighted enthusiasts. And I found that fascinating, the idea that the visual magic tricks are, you know, some of them, you know, I could totally see how they would translate, others not so much. I, in my heart, believe that the thing that makes Firefly great are the characters and the dialogue between them. There are serviceable graphics. At the time, they were extraordinary. Nowadays, it's a common trope to see this kind of pop-in move as you're looking at computer graphics, but they're shaky cam as if somebody's holding a camera, and then you see a zoom in as if you watch them, you know, somebody grabbed a lever and pulled it to zoom in and refocus and so on. But I don't know how well those have aged on this. They don't seem quite so extraordinary now. So I'm hopeful that it would be pretty great just to listen to dialogue. And there's part of me that wants to maybe experience it just listening to it to see how
there's
it good, holds
there's
up.
There's decent sound design too.
Yes, yes.
So you can tell when a ship is arriving and things like that. I don't really know how to answer that since I've only viewed them. Is there an assistive audio track like there is with Daredevil for Firefly out there? Have you ever run into that?
Not yet, but I know that this is part of you know, Netflix's plan is to have that built into all of them, and I will vouch for that in a big, big way. Like, there's a number of things that I do just by listening to assistive audio on there.
To his first question, where to find it. Let me teach you how to fish before I give you the fish first. JustWatch.com. Go there, justwatch.com. Anytime you want to know where to see anything, it is one of the best places to go to look up stuff and find out, because they move around. Firefly was on Netflix not too long ago, and it is now on Hulu. So if you go to justwatch.com, it'll be available. It'll tell you it's available on Hulu. It'll also tell you what stores you can buy it. You can buy it from Vudu and Google Play and Amazon and iTunes as well. And I don't know if there's different non-visual features in those different stores, so that might be worth investigating as well. And then, Brian, you found it on full screen's service on Amazon, it sounds like.
Yep. I originally was just going to buy it on Amazon Video, but instead I saw the F word. I pressed a free 7-day trial, and here I am a week later paying, I think, $14.99 a month for this service that I don't really care about. So congratulations, world. You got me again.
So let that be a lesson to you.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. I hope that helps you out, Tom. And I hope you all enjoyed hearing us talking about the shows. We'll be back next week with more. Right, Brian?
Yeah. Yes.
No, you're correct. Yes. Yes. We'll spoil you next time. Right. That's what I'm trying to say. Bye.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.